about this. This is a very interesting group. I know the criminological side of this group. I don't know the other people. I'm trying to figure out what to talk about. I went back and forth about things to look at. We have people from many different backgrounds, speak languages differently, but there's a common area of interest. So I had to decide what to do, and I thought, okay, criminologists, I think, know a little bit about what's going on with crime. And I wasn't sure whether maybe movies, thrillers, or stuff have other people's interests. So I made a decision to, in looking at the areas that are really of interest to people now, everything from different types of intelligence-led policing, everyday crimes, terrorism, large events, like we have the Olympics coming to Vancouver, and it's a disaster inching forward for anyone who's been in Vancouver. We have big summits, we have gangs, we have general disorder, which is quite a concern. And looking at all of these, I wanted to figure out how to give you a feeling for it. So I thought, I'm mostly going to give you, those people who don't know crime, a visual image of what's going on. I'm going to leave it to the rest of you to end up giving some formulas, things like that, but I wanted to give the non-criminologists a little bit of a feel for it. So in doing this, now this is the high-tech side, and we'll see what happens. This is the province of British Columbia. It's a Mercator projection, if anyone can remember back to high school. But BC and California are about the same physical size. And Mark, you just got back from Vancouver, right? Vancouver, well, BC as a whole has a population of around 4 million, and California has a population of about 34 million. So it's about the same size, but it's quite different that way. So I thought I'd give you just a little bit of a picture of crime in British Columbia. And RA did this, so, you know, it's got its jumpy side, but it's kind of interesting. You can see it's highly scattered, high intensity in some areas. This is coming in on Vancouver. And still, it still has heavy concentration of hot spots and other areas where it's very scattered. And we'll get into some of that, but if you've been to British Columbia, you would start to already understand what was going on. Now, I tell you right now, except for the main roads, those aren't streets. Those are actually where crimes are occurring. All the things that look like little grids.
Is this reporting like total crimes? Is that what
that's total crimes. We have total crimes for British Columbia in perpetuity.
Is this crime reported by the police?
Calls to the police. And it's in 181 categories. So this is, you know, we got any of this stuff interests you, please talk with me. We have lots of fun things to do up there. But this is a massive amount of crime, more than, I gotta stop it.
What time period are we looking at?
This is just a 3-year time period, and I think this has 5 million. In the city of Vancouver, we get about 28,000 calls a month, and we get into even a broader picture there. But it's a lot of crimes. But you can see how spotty it is. It's not exactly, I gave it to you in the dynamic way. These are another way that people like to show it. You can see how it's concentrated down in the lower point. This is Vancouver, but when you get into Vancouver, you can see it's higher and lower in some places. The thing about a place, which is one of the fun things about the mathematical study of this, if you end up looking at three different cities within British Columbia, there are very similar things going on, but the pattern looks very different, but not the mathematical way of making them similar. And it's really the physical barriers that end up shaping it. There's nothing surrounding these particular towns, just wilderness. So this is kind of what British Columbia looks like. This is actually where I live, and this is SFU. But that's full of bears, that's full of bears, that's water. If I could fly, if anyone wants to use a direct distance measure, we'd get there pretty quick, but no, it takes quite a bit longer. But it's wilderness. We have physical barriers galore. But you also have human activity that creates attractions and also barriers, and the structures of cities that do that. And I wanted to give you a little bit of a feel for what's going on. This is in the city of Vancouver, to give you some of the diversity. And like I said, the city of Vancouver, it's about 28,000-30,000 calls for service. Now, this includes everything from noisy people. But this is one area, and there are a few people in this room that might be able to look at pictures like this. Only a few of you, like I should go back to the prior one and bring back memories of the 60s. But this is kind of a minor drug dealing area. Those are needles. We have a lot of drug dealing up in Vancouver. But it's an area where you have a lot of people who live on the street as well. But when you get to the calls for service, and this is part of what's fascinating about what you can do with all of this, is you have an image of one thing, but you get a range of types of calls. And these are the terms they use. They aren't ones I made up for that area. That's one part of the city. This is in the center of our drug dealing area. Is there anyone here who's from the police? Okay, if you look at this image, you could tell right away that's drug dealing. There are probably 30 crimes going on right in one picture. Okay, I mean, this is injectable cocaine. You see little wrappers, aren't you crack now? And those are all dealers. That's what's going on there. And that's one block from the police station. This is also part of that same area. But these are the type of calls you get. So you very much have patterns of different types of calls, different mixtures of calls that reflect, it's kind of sentinel conditions that kind of reflect what's going on but aren't identical. Then here's more like, Mark, what you might have seen, the tourist street. Let's go down Robson Street.
I just saw a math institute.
Oh, I forgot. Okay. This is the real world here. You're just out at UBC then. Which is very nice, but this is the sort of crimes that it's on the other side of the city. It's the sort of crimes they have there. So you have very different mixture, but it's always this kind of continual thing. And what you have is a variety of different things. You frequently have one person who will commit many crimes, but many different types of crimes. You have crimes that tend to concentrate where people concentrate, but it all depends. Not always where people concentrate. We have things we call crime attractors, which pull people towards an area to commit crimes, like the drug dealing area, or crime generators, like in the drug dealing area, because that is illegal in Canada. People spend for a short distance around there's a lot of breaking into automobiles, steal something, sell it, buy some drugs. It's about a 45-minute loop through that. But I wanted to give you a little bit of a brief background. Like, the interest in crime, it's been there for a long while, but it also comes from many other disciplines that had kind of tangential, they kind of touched on mathematics, but it's really fun to get mathematics involved. And the first one, which any geographer would know, is someone named John Snow. It was during the cholera period in London. And he was someone who figured out, people thought that people were dying from cholera and all the dots are where dead people live. It's coming from vapors from a cemetery. But no, what he figured out was it was coming from water pumps. And he used different techniques, which have lived with us forever, in order to figure out which pump it was. They actually removed a handle, good old situational crime prevention, and boom, really reduced the cholera deaths. I always like to put in pictures of people who do this, because Snow is so well known, but that's what he looked like. Another one, many of you probably have heard of Kristall or central place theory. I mean, it looks like Voronoi diagrams. I have hunted around, Googled it to death. I cannot find out if he knew about Voronoi diagrams, because it came long before him. But it very much was the sort of stuff of regularization, something that's always been at the back of kind of geography, is wanting to find underlying regular patterns, then look at the way you deform them into real patterns. The Voronoi diagrams are particularly of interest to people now, as well as graphs, but they're being used for doing things like finding paths, roof paths, for doing hierarchies of storing data, and also for changing images into different forms, and that's just using different numbers of points here. A very powerful way We've done a little bit with it, where you do born eye diagrams for different types of crimes and overlay them and start to see what kind of interesting patterns you get out of it. But today, this week, most of the talks are about hotspots, where we're looking at the sources, the movement, choice, some combination of motivation and opportunity. But there's a plurality of motivations and of opportunities. So I thought, just to give you an idea, as we get into a little more of it, is you can kind of think of it as there's one motivation, you know, maybe the need for money, an individual, an opportunity, a crime might occur. But you can have the same type of motivation working for a group of people, resulting in one crime. You could have the same motivation for different people not working together, two crimes. You could have one person who works under a range of different types of motivations, each influencing a different crime, producing a different type of result. Then you start combining all of this with the thousands and thousands of offenders. You can see how you get into dynamic, complex graphs very quickly. Give you an idea. As Mark mentioned, this is one of the very popular things in criminology. And I put one in, or borrowed it from Mark Newman from physics at University of Michigan. And this one on this side shows an attempt to have people from agent-based modeling through sequencing RNA, how they ended up working together collaboratively. And I only see a few links here. I don't see as many as I'd like. So hopefully, following up on what Mark said, that we use every opportunity we have and in every spare moment to talk back and forth. Use our own language, but see if we can understand the semantics of someone else. What we basically find, which isn't exactly like it is on TV, is that the routines of daily living, major activity points, the basic infrastructure of a city, and these barriers greatly influence where crimes do occur. We have constraints, and we have alternatives. The randomness of the alternatives, that will be talked about quite a lot. But I wanted to show you a little bit about a basic model I did many years ago to give you a bit of a feeling. And it's probably my age. It's got more of a tie to topology than would normally be done now. But if you were to look at home location, basically they find that people do tend to not go very far, if one were to assume that there were opportunities in all directions. And there aren't necessarily opportunities in all directions. But this is very similar to, and I stole this from the website. That's okay, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ask you. That's not a crime, right? And give you an idea of using Brownian motion or Levy-Flight, the different types of approaches where you can look at different types of patterning. Part of what we want to do is understand what's going on, get new techniques to find out what's going on. But what we found over time is that all of you, we had trouble getting here today because the 405 was packed at one point, so we took a diversion. So I had no idea where UCLA was, and I didn't realize we were driving away from it. So he's panicking more and more, and so am I. Then he's telling me, oh no, we're going towards Santa Monica, and I thought, ooh, that's not near UCLA. So then he makes this turn. But what happens for all of us is we do develop routines where we know how to get to a place, we learn them. And if you drive cars, your car drives itself a lot. If you ride a bicycle, as Hank does, I hope it doesn't handle itself. Do you at least think when you're riding your bicycle?
I can do it as my eyes closed. Yes.
Okay. But people do develop routines. We tend to know those areas. You know what's going around there. Speed matters. As your speed increases, your knowledge constricts. When you slow down and walk, you know more of the details. So we develop this kind of awareness space around us. The thing is, potential opportunities, be it a car, be it shoplifting, be it breaking into a house, there are many more opportunities out there than there are actual crimes. So some of it becomes knowing individuals, their movement patterns. This is somewhat leads to agent-based modeling a lot. Their individual patterns, and you look at the overlay, and some areas are much greater risk. You can have identical types of structures for that someone might break into for a burglary. And located in one area, there's no risk at all. In another area, there's a higher risk. It also has been found out a lot that people do develop, using all sorts of interesting ways, different types of characteristics, kind of the schemes that work for identifying different types of targets which are good. So not every house is attractive, not every car is attractive. There are different things that you learn within that that tend to restrict even further where crimes occur. Then we get into the stuff where this stuff hasn't been done, because this really requires a level of power that just hasn't been available to criminologists yet. As you start taking those types of patterns, you take multiple people, they meet, research has been done, they get to know each other, you take their different patterns, you combine them, and then you get a change. You learn new locations from friends when you go visit their homes. It changes your awareness space. You move, you find different things. But all together, when you start doing this aggregate, it's not just a summation, it's an interaction summation. It has a dynamic change. It has what criminologists might call life course as well. But all of that has a lot of potential, a lot of interesting ways to look at things. What we find overall from that, though, is that basically, this is kind of going back, these are terms that were originally done by someone named Kevin Lynch, but it kind of comes from back from grads. You have nodes, paths, edges. The nodes are high activity, but it's really important to be able to scale. And George has done things where you start looking at, you've got within a city, where are the activity nodes? Within an activity node, where within it do people congregate? Then within a building, where do they congregate? Which stairway, which floor, and why? It's like there's activity patterns and there are barriers. Some research shows that if you have one or two turnings away from a main road, crime drops off incredibly. Paths are really important. We learn certain ways, but we have different awareness with them. And it all depends on what is along the pathway. It's kind of like one of the people we work with did his PhD in computational physics, and he was looking at electrons bouncing off of different things. And it turned out that the permeability of the structures that were containing it had some influence on what the angle would be, how much it might, I'm not going to use the right words in physics, but intrude into it. But very much humans live on the same sort of thing. We go along, we notice some things along our pathway, we don't notice others. Some of those things actually become stopping points, become new nodes. But one of the more important things from the chronological point of view is if you take these pathways and you look at what's along these pathways, you get things which we tend to call edges. And that's where you have big differentiations in land use. It could be the physical type barriers of water, things that make you more aware of certain areas. That's the sort of things that tend to become part of where crimes occur. What we also have is with people, I think they're saying the numbers always range, but it could be anything from 10 to 20% of people who commit crimes maybe account for 50% of all crimes. A few people are high repeat offenders. And then a lot of people are occasional one-time offenders. So we have crimes that are created by people being attracted to a location to commit a crime. And then we have other crimes that are created more by just the flow of people. It's kind of like on the marketing side. I'm sure all of you have gone into stores where you have nice, easy things that you can pick up, hoping that you'll be an opportunistic buyer of some good. Well, those are also the places that have more shoplifting, because you can be an opportunistic thief as well as an opportunistic buyer. So some people, it's just the major flow. With others, it's the attractors. Anyone who has anything to do with policing knows that there will be the bars or the pubs that are the ones where most of the fights occur. Not everybody goes there to get into a fight, but they like going where there are fights. We have all sorts of things. That's correct, isn't it? It always happens. Not every bar or pub is one that has fights. Some are a lot. Not every shopping center has a lot of kids going to it and stealing cars, but some do. There's all of these characteristics that go with what attracts, what repels, what's neutral. To give you a little bit of an idea, these were done a long time ago, but This is the center of Vancouver. And where you've got the real peak of motor vehicle thefts, that's the heart of the finance, big business part of the city, which is right adjacent to our poorest part of the city. So it's well within a 5-minute walk of that corner I showed you where they do all the drug dealing. So that's where there's the peak in motor vehicle thefts. If you look at assaults, it moves over slightly. That's where there's a concentration of the really tough pubs and bars. In fact, one of the talks that's really nice is about the density. At what point with different types of agents coming in do you hit a critical point? Well, that's the concentration of all of the calls for assaults in the city of Vancouver. You move to family trouble, and those are calls that come from it's the Vancouver term, but it's calls that come from a household about some sort of a dispute or a fight. So you get, obviously, that's where the bars are. That's a little bit where the houses are, but why there? And those aren't all just poor areas. Crime and poverty isn't exactly what people think. Not in North America. If you were to go to Brazil, you were to go to other parts of the world, to developing countries, the patterns are different. But in our world where there's more income and more goods to steal, the patterns of crime become quite different than they do in very poor countries. So we have in exactly the same city, we get three very different patterns. Now, to give you an idea, this is something that was done for the purpose of art, as a way to, they say it was for art. In Amsterdam, the Vaud, is that right?
Bach.
Say it again.
Bach.
Society. Let's try that once more.
It's difficult. Yeah.
No, you say the whole word.
Bach.
Society got everybody to put on GPSs, volunteers, and then track them. And some of this is the routine patterning and then what you get in the aggregate. So this was a nice weather cyclist. Did you wear this GPS?
Yes.
Clearly, you can guess where the home location is, and this one likes a lot of different paths, and some days has quite a bit more energy than others. Sometimes gets about this far, goes home, up there, I wonder what's at that location. Sometimes,
university.
Oh, is that?
The university.
Oh, the university. This is the main path. And there's some other weekend ones, and, you know, meanders around. But it's kind of a nice pattern. Here's a marathon runner. Home? Running around the block? I don't know. But, you know, a little bit here, but any pathway they like, something up there. Come back along that same path, sometimes different routes, but great regularity. So they did this with several thousand people, and then they have the aggregate of it. This is on their website, and I've got that location. But in the aggregate, I've only been through Amsterdam. How many of you know Amsterdam? Is that the train station?
No.
No, what's that?
Red blob.
But you can get kind of, there must be some sort of big loop road around.
Yes, that's
the ring road, where business is concentrated.
Ah, okay.
The faculty.
Oh, faculty.
The university faculty and the where the art department is.
Okay.
So I think this is some selectivity question.
Would that ever happen?
This is Dam Square.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea why this is there. There's a movie theater there, so it may be again the arts people over there.
Train station's there.
Train station is
the main shopping center.
Can you see where I live?
Where do you live?
here. The central station is about here. This is the ferry to the north.
That's really been helpful. It's the clear bias of who did this. They did this for an art project. It's just, I found it interesting in seeing how, what it is that you get the individuals and then you start to get the aggregates. But now we're saying this is the aggregate of the arts. Okay, what sort of aggregate pattern do you get for offenders, for repeat offenders? Many of them live in, they work in groups, so they may live in the same area. So how much will that influence the overall pattern? It's like there are ways, and there should be ways, using many different areas of mathematics, besides agent-based modeling and graph theory, fuzzy topology, a whole range of things. We even have to do interesting things in developing the different kinds of measures of distance or metrics. It's because distance isn't equal. It's kind of like when you go out to a new location for the very first time, you're invited out to dinner at somebody's house. And if it took you, in measuring in minutes or in measuring in kilometers, it's exactly the same out as back. It's not the same for you in your mind. Which is quicker? Going home. Mm-hmm. You know the route. First time through, it's slower. So people have all sorts of different ways. Perceptions of time differ. And in fact, they don't go equally in both directions. There's many good, fun things to look at that way that aren't necessarily that simple. But basically, for the stuff I talked about today, and this is the stuff that relates to hotspots, it's more like movement patterns, it's the dynamic change, it's the ability to capture that, to look at the spatial barriers and the attractors and the generators, to figure out the ways to be able to model this sort of thing, because it's never static, it's always changing. It changes over the course of the day, over the course of an hour. A city has a certain dynamic side to it, so does crime. It's never flat, it's always changing. And that's what a lot of the talks today are about, is that sort of thing. But I should tell you, for some of you, that there's a whole other side that's not being covered in this week, that is a big thing of interest, and that's the side that goes with it goes with the surveillance, being able to track figures across different images. It goes with understanding of the audio. It goes with all of that side, which really comes very much into the law enforcement side. That is one booming, fascinating area of mathematics. In fact, this last week I was at the Hawthorne Lab at IBM for a couple of days, seeing what it is they're doing. It's absolutely fascinating where that's going, and a lot of it, it's a different sort of thing. I've been showing you things that are points, that are vector oriented. A lot of that comes out of, on the visual side, much more kind of pixel or raster oriented. And it's a different approach, but it's just wonderful, and I hope that people talk about that during the different breaks as well. But in this one, it's looking at where crimes occur, where offenders live, how they move about, what influences what, all of those sorts of things. But having given you all of that, I thought I'd try and see if perhaps that's changed your view of these crazy little dots. And there's a criminologist we know that says you have to have a north arrow and a scale, and I don't have any of that, so he's not here to condemn me. But there are only main streets in here, but you can see the regularity. You can probably guess, I could tell you what those concentrations are, but some of it is, you may be attracted by a certain land use or activity. The question is whether it's greater than expected or less than expected. It never just follows, as much as we can tell, the volume of people. There's much more to it. But it is really a nice province, despite all these crimes. And it varies from north to south, east to west. Tourism BC said to tell you that it's a beautiful province. There's more than UBC to it. There's more than PIMS. There's more than MyTax. The central part is mountains. Snowing year round. Not like in Santa Monica. Was it Santa Monica that got snowed on?
Malibu,
okay. It's just, it's a very different sort of place, but when you get into the urban areas, some of the dynamics seem to hold true from place to place to place.